This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international programme of the non-profit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org. And if you want to join in the conversation and share your thoughts on this episode, join the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the Facebook search field. We look forward to seeing you there.
This is Robert Picardo, the emergency medical hologram from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hi everyone at home and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host Kay Shaw, and with me as always is
Zachary Frueling.
Well, as we all mentioned last week, Suzanne's having her time with her little boy at the moment, and it's going to be probably a week or two at least before we get her back. So this week we've got a special guest on for you. We've got Justin on from Earl Grey. Hi Justin.
Hi, it's great to be here. And this ready room is really big. You know, it looks kind of big on TV, but when you're actually here in person, it's just enormous. Tell you what, is it okay if I just go over there to that huge sofa and just lay down and podcast from there? Would that be all right?
You know, there's kind of a void here without Suzanne, but Justin, you're filling the void.
Oh, does that have something to do with what we're talking about today? I was just lying here on the couch and closed my eyes for a minute.
I was actually kind of thinking we should do a musical introduction, something like
I feel like I ought to like fill in the Mario theme tune or something here, but my brain is refusing to supply it for me.
Well, anyway, it's really a pleasure to be here on To The Journey. I haven't been onto the journey before, and Voyager actually has a special place in my heart because it was the first Star Trek that I saw on TV, and I was going through a tough time in high school, and I'd watch it each week, and it would really help me with what I was going through in my last year of high school. And I went off to college and unfortunately forgot about Star Trek and Voyager for a little bit until I picked things back up after I saw the 2009 movie. But, you know, going back and watching the episode we're going to be talking about today, and when I recently did a rewatch of Voyager, it was just bringing back all of these good memories for something that helped me at a difficult time in my life.
It's interesting you say that, because I feel like a lot of people have a Voyager therapy story. I do. Kay does. Suzanne does.
Yeah.
And you do. Why is that?
I don't know why.
Why do people relate to Voyager in that way? I feel like more than other Star Trek series. I don't really know why.
Well, I have a theory, and it's that, you know, the whole concept for Voyager is that they're stuck somewhere far from home. They're lost, and they're trying to find their way. And I think for a lot of people, like how I was feeling at a certain point, you felt lost and you were trying to find your way, and you could really feel sympathy with these characters, and that could help get you through that, and that there would be, you know, kind of a positive way forward. I think that's some of it.
Maybe we should rename the show To The Existential Journey.
I was going to say To The Emotional Journey, but that could work as well.
Yeah, no, I'm absolutely with you on that, Justin. I definitely think that that's a large part of what the connection is there. I think we have a plan at some point to do an episode where we kind of talk about that a bit more. So I think I'll save more of my detailed thoughts for then. But yeah, I'm definitely with you on that one. So when we asked you if you wanted to come on, it was because you had an idea for something that you'd like to talk about. So do you want to give us a little intro on what you wanted to talk about and why?
Sure. So there's an episode I wanted to talk about. It's about midway through season 7 called The Void, if you might have picked that up from what Zach was saying before. and I
subtle, huh?
Very subtle. And I picked this episode because I talked about watching Voyager a little bit in high school. That was in season 3, and it took me many years to kind of come back to it and really watch through everything. And when I did that within the last couple of years and really kind of sat down and made sure I watched all of Voyager and some of the stuff that I had missed, this episode came up as one that took me by surprise and really impressed me, because I feel like encapsulated within this one episode, they're trying to build this alliance and this federation within this void or this place where they're stuck. And Janeway is very clear about, you know, sticking to her principles and being uncompromising about it. And for me, you know, ethical decisions are very important, and I very much connected to that kind of uncompromising way of saying, these are our principles, we're going to stick to it. It may seem like that's going to hurt us, but in the end, it's going to help us get there. And I felt like also, so I connected to that part, but I felt like also with the concept of the episode that they're building these alliances and this federation, it made me wonder, like, could that have been the concept of Voyager as a whole, that they are stuck in the Delta Quadrant and they maybe accept it and start to kind of build alliances and build like a federation in the Delta Quadrant. So it made me think about that. I think there's a lot of great stuff that happens in this episode. It's probably one of my favorites. It may be in my top five of all Voyager episode. I just connect a lot to the decisions that are being made, the, you know, people working together and just trying to come to an understanding to that the sum of what they can do together is greater than if they're just kind of working against each other individually.
Yeah, definitely.
It's like a little microcosm of the entire Star Trek ethos and worldview wrapped into a single episode, like really self-contained in a bubble inside this void, right? Because it illustrates the challenges of self-interest and looking after your own needs versus the communal good and forming alliances out of social contracts. It's really a fascinating, just a microcosm is the best word I can think of to, you know, it captures the entire Star Trek worldview about sticking to your principles, but also looking out for other people, checking your baser instincts of self-interest for the greater good. It captures that whole idea brilliantly, I think. And it's not one of my favorite episodes, honestly. I think this is one I would skip by a lot. It's like, is this another one of the episodes where they can't see the stars again? Isn't that like night? I don't remember this episode really grabbing me, but I rewatched it before we started recording, and I was surprised how enjoyable it actually is. I feel kind of bad now that I've been skipping over this one in my rewatches.
It's definitely one that I remember, but it's never been a favorite. But actually watching it as a sort of exercise for this and trying to focus on it a bit more and getting really into the depths of what you were saying, Justin, I definitely have a more of an appreciation for it. So I'm really looking forward to talking about it.
Yeah, and you mentioned, Zach, that there's some similarities to Night, which is an early season 5 episode where they kind of get stuck in this place where there's no stars that they can see for many, many light years. And also, the Void has a lot of similarities to an animated series episode called The Time Trap, where the Enterprise gets stuck in this place where it's different, though, because there's this kind of benevolent alliance or federation of people, and the Enterprise is trying to actually not stay there and to get out, so there's some similarities to some things that have come before, but this one I think connects with me a lot because I think you're right, Zach, it is kind of a microcosm of the Federation ideals. And there's also, you know, it at the beginning they're going toward home, but they're also about exploration, and they make first contact with some new species here. And there's just a lot of things that we see elsewhere in Star Trek kind of wrapped up into one episode. And I feel like they do it in a way that it doesn't, to me, feel like rushed, but that they're doing it at the right pace and fitting in a lot. So I actually find it quite an exciting episode, and I really liked rewatching it for this.
Well, I think the stakes are higher in this episode. In Night, essentially, the major problem in that episode is boredom, right? They're looking at 2 years with nothing in front of them. They can't see the stars. Neelix is going to replicate some curtains. He's dealing with can't deal with the nothingness around him. It's almost like being in a never-ending story with the nothing encroaching, right? So there's this boredom ennui going on in that episode. Here, the stakes are high because it's more like being in Thomas Hobbes's State of Nature, where it's life is nasty and brutish and short, and people are going to steal your food and pillage and plunder your ship, and the stakes are a lot higher in that regard. So.
Yeah, I mean, the problem isn't boredom. I mean, as soon as they get into this place, they get attacked immediately.
Right.
It's much more difficult, and they're kind of fighting for survival the whole time, and they've got, a short energy reserve, and they lose some of their supplies. And yeah, they're pretty high stakes throughout, and I like it for that as well.
I think they missed an incredible opportunity to book into the Neelix curtain thing. I would have had Neelix drop another curtains reference, personally, if I were writing this episode.
That would have been great.
Neelix's like, not again, I gotta replicate some curtains.
He was too busy being jealous of Seven doing the cooking at the beginning.
I'm so glad you mentioned that, because I had completely forgotten that scene was in this episode, and I had such a laugh at the beginning of this episode. Seven's like, it's fine the way it is, you do not need salt. If you want something else, I can replicate you a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, Tom.
As soon as the episode started, I went, oh, this is the one with the peanut butter and jelly sandwich quote, and I was like laughing straight away.
She's taking her culinary ball and bat and going home.
So later on, when he does the meal for Tom and B'Elanna, do you think that's him trying to compete with Seven?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. I always got that impression where he was just like, yep, she's going to start doing all these fancy dinners. I'm going to start doing fancy dinners. I may have eyeballs or whatever the heck they were that he served. But...
And I love that the wine choice for Chakotay is not optional.
Yes.
Yeah. They must be paired together.
No, you'll have the wine I told you to have. Thank you. Yeah, she's great. Yeah, it's not. That's a nice little side plot there, but yeah.
Seven of Nine on 24th Century MasterChef.
Yeah.
Well, that was a nice tangent from the important things in this episode.
Well, we can get that out of the way, and then we can start talking about, all the really good serious stuff that's in there.
Seriously, though, I think that's maybe the thing that makes this episode not work for me. It's a little uneven. The stakes are really high, and yet we have all this funny stuff at the beginning of the episode, and we've got this weird B-plot with the musical aliens and their musical language, and it just feels a little disjointed.
I disagree with that, because I actually really like it when there's a lot of drama in an episode, but it's cut with some other things. There's some humor, there's some other things that are going on. I actually really like that, because when a Star Trek episode does that, it starts with something that's kind of funny or humorous. It sets a certain stage for, to be able to do something dramatic later. I don't know, but that's always worked for me. And actually the aliens that they make contact with and that they end up teaching them this sound language, it's integral to them getting out of the void. Yeah. So that works for me.
Yeah.
I mean, actually...
At least the A plot and the B plot come together.
They do come together. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I feel like when it's something at the beginning like that that's humorous, it's kind of a moment where you're seeing, how well that they get along together, they're integrated together by this point in season seven. And it does really raise the stakes for what happens later. And what I like about what we see in this episode also is that there's a point when Janeway really wants to stick to her principles, and she does, but there's an argument that she's having with Tuvok and Chakotay, and they're saying, hey, we may have to be opportunistic about what we do here. We may have to consider the rules that we might have to bend. And they have this discussion. And eventually, Janeway makes a decision we're going to go and do it this way. We're not going to compromise our principles. And you see later Tuvok and Chakotay arguing the point to some other aliens. I like that they have this argument, they work it out, and then they're on board with it. And there isn't something like you might see in another episode where there's some crew member that betrays them or something like that. They're all in it together in this one.
what I like about this is the way in which the episode plays with the psychological motivation for forming an alliance, forming a social contract. On the one hand, you could think of it as being motivated out of purely out of self-interest. Like, I don't want the other aliens to steal my food and steal my resources, so we form this alliance out of motivated self-interest. Yeah. On the other hand, we've got Janeway saying principles, principles, principles. You know, she has this higher, more lofty goal in mind in forming an alliance. So, you know, in Star Trek, I think there, in general, and in this episode as a microcosm, there's a tension between continuing to, you know, press the agenda of forming an alliance, expanding the Federation out of self-interest versus for some higher cause.
Yeah, I think they kind of work together, though. I think they really do, because it's like, it's not just, oh, well, we're going to have a Federation because that's the right and moral thing to do. And obviously that's first and foremost. But also it's because actually, by doing that, we're going to achieve more. So, like, I think the focus of this for me is on kind of where she says, oh, well, you know, if we carried on doing what we're doing and kind of just all work against each other, we might survive, like, for 7 days. Because Chakotay says, oh, well, we're going to have 7 days worth of resources. And she's like, well, yeah, okay, so we might only have two if we do this, but actually then we've got a chance of escaping. So what's the difference between dying in 2 days or seven versus potentially getting out of here? And I was like, yeah, that's a very practical way to look at it.
And if you're not constantly worried about someone stealing your stuff, you have time to relax, chill out. You can, like, go listen to a musical concert by those aliens with a musical language. Yeah. You know, you have time to kind of chill, you know, not to worry about people stealing your stuff all the time.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think that what's really striking is that throughout the episode, that Captain Janeway has this unshakable faith that if they stick to their principles, it'll get them out of it. Like, throughout it, that's tested. She loses some allies because of it, but she has this faith in it that it won't be shaken, and that if they stick together, they'll get out of it and get the best outcome instead of trying to stoop to the level of what everyone else is doing. And even if they are able to survive, they'll have a terrible existence over the course of, you know, months and years. It's better to, you know, at one point, Chakotay is asking if the crew should be ready to, you know, die for these principles that she's talking about. And she says, if the alternative means becoming thieves and killers ourselves, yes. But I'm betting that our principles are going to keep us alive. Mm. And I really like that. There's something that I really like and admire about somebody that's willing to actually stick to those principles and possibly die for it, because she feels like that's what's right. And if they're going to keep on living and be thieves and killers, then what's the point of being alive, you know?
But see, to me, that really sounds like saying, okay, if your reasoning is something like, I'm going to stick to my principles so it will preserve my life, so I won't have to be afraid anymore. That's kind of like saying, I'm going to follow the rules so I don't get caught. Like, you know, that's not like a pure motivation for principle. That's still self-interest in my mind.
No, and there is the self-interest, because when you're sticking to your principles, you're doing it because that's what you want to do, or that's what you appreciate doing. But I think that the important thing about sticking to the principles is that she feels like that's the best way that they're going to get out of this. But if they don't get out of this and they have to die for those principles, at least they didn't have to live out their lives hurting and killing other people. Yeah. And I appreciate that a lot, because that's how I feel.
And I think it's kind of an obvious point that the extent to which they're spending their time and resources keeping the raiders at bay, basically, you know, trying to, you know, preserve their lives and preserve their resources, that's time and energy and resources they're not spending on trying to solve the problem and get out of the void.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Right.
I think I do get what you're saying, Zach, that maybe at times it seems like it's self-interest as well as just the upholding of the morals. But then we get that little bit where they get the piece of technology that the guy's like, he's killed somebody to get it. And she's like, well, we can't use it because it's a violation of everything we stand for, even though that's going to get them further on the path. So I think definitely, you know, the moral still comes first, even though they want to get out of
there. And that's a great scene. She's like, take your technology and get off my ship.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think that it's still, she takes that action because she feels like if they start going down that road and continue taking those actions, that's not what's going to help them actually get out and have people, you know, work together with them. And I mean, I think in the end, they have the loyalty of this this new species and their help to get out, because she's sticking to those principles and, and treating them well, even though maybe she wouldn't have to or doesn't expect anything out of it. So by sticking along that path, it does help in the end.
Well, I think it shows how tenuous alliances are, too. I mean, there's a tender, fragile, newborn alliance in this episode, right? And the new members of this alliance are already starting to rip away at its core, right? You know, we got one guy who's stealing technology and they're not abiding by the high principles that Captain Janeway has. And it's amazing how easily we can devolve, I think, from aiming high and having high principles and sticking to our guns in that way, versus continuing to be motivated by self-interest. It's like it pulls away at the alliance, right? You know, the second they form an alliance, these you know, new alliance members are almost immediately going back to their old ways.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's very fragile, and until it becomes to the point where it's more permanent, like what you have in the Federation, then it's fragile.
It's like us and Russia, you know, okay, 30 years ago, we were in the Cold War, and then we became friends all of a sudden, and now, you know, 20 years later,
right.
we're already not playing nice with Russia again. You know, these alliances are really tenuous, both in the real world and in Star Trek.
Well, and even before then, you know, Russia was an ally before the Soviet Revolution, then they were an enemy, and then they were an ally during World War II, and then they were an enemy. I mean, these things kind of go back and forth and back and forth.
Mm. So what makes an alliance sticky is that it holds together rather than tenuous and fragile and falls apart too easily?
I think everyone has to have the same absolute devout determination to stick to it that Janeway does. I think that's the point. I think, I don't know, for me, almost to the point where in this episode, the idea of this Federation alliance, etc., it almost takes on a religious quality for me. Like, it's like the gospel. It's like the thing that she, like, holds the highest, you know.
Totally. It's like the irrational premise that she's starting from. Like, the alliance is better.
Yeah.
And so everything's going to be framed in terms of that.
Yeah, she's so absolute about it. And I think for it to be lasting, I think everybody's got to think about it in the same way.
But I think in the episode, the allies that they have don't think about it in the same way. They just think it's terrible here, and maybe this is our chance to get out. Or they're giving us food and medical supplies, and let's see how that goes. It's not. I don't think it's because they're sticking to those principles. And you know, I think that's one of the reasons why, as soon as they get out of the void, they just kind of go their separate ways.
Yeah,
because
sure.
There's nothing really permanent there.
So Kay, that quasi-religious view of the alliance that Captain Janeway has, is that something that you can achieve out of this motivated self-interest that is the germ for the alliance in the first place?
No, I don't think so, because as Justin was just saying, you know, once they're out of the void, well,
it falls apart.
We've done the thing we were trying to do now, so therefore it doesn't, it's not a thing anymore.
And one of the captains was headed in the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Anyway. But also these things take time. Like if you think about in the real world, you know, let's say America and the United Kingdom, right? I think it took some time after, you know, America split away to kind of come back to the point of being allies and, you know, really strong allies. It takes time. And
it took at least until after 1812.
Right. but I mean, like in the Star Trek universe as well, so there's first contact with the Vulcans in, you know, 2063, and there's a kind of this gradual process that takes place over the course of close to 100 years until they're ready to become part of the Federation and to join together. So it takes time, and during this episode they really have a week or something like that. I mean, that's not the basis for a permanent alliance. I think sometimes it takes time and common interests over the course of many years.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's my point. Is Captain Janeway aiming a little too high in her view of alliances in this episode, given the short-term nature of
Well, but her alliance? Only goal throughout the episode is to get out of this void. So if the alliance is the tool to do that...
I don't think that's true, because she moralizes the heck out of the dude who she kicks off her ship.
Well, right, but I think it's because she has this belief that only the right kind of alliance for the right kind of reason is going to attract the people and the actions they need to get out. At least that's how I interpret how
And I do like that Captain Janeway sticks to her guns. She's not just going to get into any alliance. She's going to get into the right kind of alliance line with her values.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of twofold, really, because There is the, oh, well, we need to get out of here. And I absolutely get that. But I also think that by this point, it's become a massive thing for Janeway. So I think there's an element of that there as well. You know, we see with the whole Equinox thing, you know, how much she comes down on Ransom and everything, and how much she kind of rails against that. And it's just absolute sacrilege for her, what he's done. So
she can hold a grudge.
It's a similar idea, you know. She's so determined that this is the way that we do things, and she's stuck to that, or she's tried to stick to that as much as she can over the 7 years, that it's just become like a beacon for her. And we see at the end this little bit where she kind of gets all wistful. She's like, oh, it's like being part of a federation again, when she's talking to Chakotay at the end.
And did you notice when she's talking to Chakotay at the end, they have like a little strain of the original series theme when they're talking about it's just like the Federation? I thought that was a nice little touch.
Yeah.
Just in the background, it's like, do, 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 do. And then they go out. But
I'm not sure I'd ever noticed that before. And I'm not sure I would have noticed it if I hadn't have just been watching the original series not that long ago and watching the movies. But it really stood out to me this time, yeah.
Actually, if you take a recording of that musical language that the aliens were playing, if you play that backwards, you get a little phrase like, Gene Roddenberry is alive, or something.
That would be funny. Actually, there was a little trivia item that I found that claimed that some of those bits have bits of other Star Trek themes in them, but I couldn't hear it. But I think going back to Janeway being kind of uncompromising, it is actually in contrast to some of the actions that she's taken over the 7 years, because there's a certain point at which she's like, we can't give the Kazon any replicator technology, but then later it's like, our most popular item this week is replicators, would you like some? But like, if I just take it within this episode, I like how she's really firm in these principles and is just gonna keep at that until it gets her somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the sort of the criticisms leveled at Janeway for the fact that sometimes she sticks to this and sometimes that she doesn't is probably a discussion for another episode that we need to do at some point. But yeah, no, I accept what you're saying. I have my own views on that, and I will air them at the appropriate time, but yes.
Okay.
You mentioned something, Justin, that sounds really interesting to me. It would have been interesting if all of Voyager had been conceived around this idea of trying to create the Federation in the Delta Quadrant.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that idea had never struck me before I watched this episode. And then I was thinking, well, why couldn't it have been like that in the Delta Quadrant? If you think of the Void being like the Delta Quadrant, they're lost somewhere, they have to find their way and get somewhere. Like, what if at the beginning it wasn't about getting home, but they were like, wow, it's really far and it's going to be really dangerous, so let's see if we can find a place to settle. And then you could have had, you know, these long arcs over the course of the series for building alliances and something like the Federation and the challenges that they have and the people that they encounter and all of that. I mean, would that have been something that you would have been interested in seeing?
Well, Captain Janeway's speech at the end of Caretaker kind of implies that that's what they were going to do, right? We're going to find alliances, and we're going to find new technologies, we're going to find that other Caretaker. And, you know, it does kind of sound like they're going to be stuck there for a long time and they're going to need to alliance the heck out of it to get through the situation.
I think I would have liked to have seen that, yeah. I mean, there's an element about the trying to get home that's just very compelling.
Well, I don't know if this is true, but what I think happened is that the arcs that they tried to introduce, like the Kazon arc at the beginning, weren't really working, and so they needed to close that and move on. Yeah.
And go somewhere else.
And once they realized they had these arcs that weren't really working out as successfully as they wanted them to, they kind of developed this pattern of just bookending these arcs and moving on, moving Voyager a little further home, getting into the next region of space to introduce new aliens, new storylines, and it kind of prevented this the stickiness of these alliances.
Mm-hmm. Well, and they always had to move on, so you couldn't really get too deeply into some of it. But yeah, I think I would have liked to see that, or even something where they have a longer arc about being stuck in this void, and it takes them longer than a single episode to get out. And maybe it's even something like that swallowed up some rogue planets that people live on, so there's different civilizations and places to visit. There could have been something really, really interesting that would have come out of this if they would have stretched it out. I mean, as much as I like it as one episode, I wonder if it would have been stretched out to be in this void for a longer period of time, what that would have been like.
I definitely think if you were going to pick out a few episodes from the whole of Voyager that kind of thematically just really work in terms of what Voyager's trying to do overall. I definitely agree with you. I think this is one where they could have done more with it. Because I always feel like, and I think I've said this before a few times on To The Journey, I feel like Voyager's at its best when they're really up against it. When the stakes are high and when, you know, everything's falling apart. That's when I feel like Voyager is at its best. And I think that's a great example of it here. And I think the more interesting ways that they can figure off to get out of that, that's not just teching the tech, the better. And diplomacy, you know, instead of teching the tech is a great one. So, yeah, I'd be all for that.
But, Kay, one thing I loved about this episode is the extent to which they have to science the science and tech the tech. You know, there's a great conversation that takes place with Seven of Nine in Astrometrics, and they've got the little graph. And it's like they're doing a Geordi PowerPoint, you know, a big Geordi PowerPoint of the, you know, got an image of the vortex, and they're talking about what they can try. Mm-hmm. And it's a very long scene. And mm-hmm. I like that they stick to their science fiction roots, even amidst all this dramatic.
Oh, yeah, no, I get that. And I'm fine with teching the tech, but it's nice that it's not just them going, oh, well, we'll figure out a way of getting out and them getting out. It's the fact that they have to do all of the diplomacy as well, so you get the extra element.
Yeah.
So that's kind of what I mean, really.
Yeah, because actually at the beginning they try something technological and it fails.
Yeah.
And so they have to go back and do the diplomacy and build the alliance until it can kind of meet up with the right technology in order to get out. It's really both of those working together. And I really like that you have those elements. It's not just the diplomacy working it out. It's not just the science, but it's them coming together, which in some ways is kind of one of the essences of the Federation, is building alliances and using technology to explore, to help out.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
So I know that we've talked about the alliances and overall trying to get out of the void, but I definitely wanted to talk about this alien species that they find in the void.
Mm.
And the first member is Fantomi. I guess we can call it Fantomi's species, maybe. I thought they were fascinating. What did you guys think about that species?
Honestly, I just love the musical language. So think of how noisy and chaotic and inelegant our ordinary language is. I just love this idea, this nice streamlined, rhythmical, musical communication that's very, you know, melodious and pleasant on the ears. I thought it was brilliant.
Yeah.
One of the more interesting races we'd seen. We just get a little bit of them in this episode, but I guess that's what I'm saying, Kay. I love that there's, in the middle of all this drama and the political negotiations, we get this really kind of interesting sci-fi element. Here's an interesting alien race. They've got this weird musical language. It's this just cool sci-fi stuff to wrap your mind around, and it was really elegant and frankly, yeah, it was beautiful. I just wanted to sit and listen to them talk on their little space pads.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love how, unlike B plots in other episodes of Star Trek and Voyager, I like how the B plot it ties in both with the main plot and also with some character stuff. I really like that. I love how it makes so much sense for it to be like the Doctor and Seven of Nine that are like involved with this musical species, because we've got the musical link with them and everything that we've sort of talked about with them and their relationship with music before. And I just think it's great. And I absolutely love that scene where they're standing there looking all smug when they're all talking to each other on their little pads. And then Janeway walks in and she's like, oh, bravo. I was just like, that scene is great. I absolutely love that. I really do. I think they're fascinating. I think the idea of communicating with music, yeah, it's great. It's a great concept.
Yeah, I love that. And I like that it's Seven that makes the connection. She makes the connection first with Fantomi. Mm. You know, he needs some more food. And she's like, well, you can get it out of my replicator ration. And then later on, you know, the doctor's enjoying hearing all of this stuff, but she stops the music and she just, you know, shows Fantomi something and makes, you know, some sound and figures out what's going on. I really yeah, like that, because I think she tends to think in terms of things that are logical or very specific, like music can be, and it makes sense that she would help to communicate with them.
I'm kind of picturing this deleted scene where this alien's tapping away on the pad and the little melody is happening, and Seven of Nine says to the doctor, what did they say? And the doctor says, you are my sunshine.
Nice.
Way to make an impression, Seven.
That would be too smooth for the doctor. I'm just thinking that would be too smooth for him. I'm not sure he's quite that smooth, is he?
That's why they deleted it.
It's on the DVD somewhere.
Yeah, but it is kind of interesting, because in that way with their language, it's like Darmok a bit. It's like, how do we communicate with them? What's mm-hmm. going on? And it's a different kind of language than you've really seen in Star Trek before. And the species itself is very interesting too, because they can refract their life signs, which seems like an amazing ability to be able yeah. to do, so that you don't get detected. They can live in really low oxygen atmospheres. So they're
what are life signs, by the way? How do those work? Like, you're not, are you radiating? Like, are you getting
I'm
off
thinking,
BO?
Well,
like,
I, what? Well, I think, like, how could you find that someone had a life sign? I think with our current technology, it would be like a heat signature. Like, you could actually see into a house heat. To see a heat signature and see a person's yeah. there. Mm-hmm. But maybe they have technology that they're able to even detect something like a heartbeat or blood flow. But
yeah, like electrical signals or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
So these aliens have refracted heartbeats? I love it.
Something like that. I mean, and also you do see in Star Trek where, you know, they're scanning a planet and there's like, oh, there's three humans here and two Vulcans over there. So they must be able to scan DNA to figure out what the species is that's there.
That's what I'm saying. The whole idea yeah. of life signs is a little hand-wavy in Star Trek in general.
Yeah, they don't
which
really
I love,
talk but. About it. But yeah, they're refracting. It's like they're cloaking themselves.
It's probably in a tech manual somewhere. We need to consult the technical manual.
Yeah, I do that in the summer. It's like 110 degrees here right now. I'm totally refracting my life signs and hiding indoors. So.
Because you think the sun hones in on you based on your life signs?
Totally. It's sucking the life out of me.
It knows. It's like cats who know when people are not cat people and they go and sit on them. The sun knows people that hate heat. It just goes straight for them.
Yeah. But yeah, they're definitely a fascinating species, and you know, they only come in some part way through the episode and you just see them a little bit, but I wanted to know more about them. I thought they were great.
Yeah, I think the thing that I didn't really quite understand about them was, if they, like, originated in the void, do we think they originated in the void? Because I know they say the void is their home, but I kind of assume they meant by that they originated there. And I think if they did originate there, what, like, obviously they had to exist before there were spaceships and stuff, so what did they exist on? That's the bit that I kind of couldn't really quite get my head around. I wanted to understand more about, like, their home and stuff, I guess.
That's a really good question. I hadn't thought about it. And at the beginning, Tuvok says that there's 150 ships in this void, and you would think that if it had been there a really long time, there'd be, you know, a lot of debris or I don't know, something like yeah. that. So it seems like it might be something that's more recent, but I don't know. Maybe they have a short lifespan and they just evolved on some of these ships over time. Yeah, I don't know if it really makes Maybe. Sense. What do you think, Zach?
Yeah, I don't know if we get enough information in the episode, right? We can extrapolate, but no. we certainly don't get enough information to know.
Yeah, it may be me, like, misinterpreting when he says, oh, the Voyager.
I think they're
home.
Sufficiently alien and different from all the other races we usually see in Voyager that it's plausible that they come from a mysterious place like the Void.
Yeah, maybe I'm thinking of them a bit like Species 8472, where they're kind of exist in a different dimension or whatever, but obviously it's not a different dimension, it's just a pocket universe or whatever. I'm stealing phrases from the animated series now.
Yeah, you know, I keep coming back to the language thing, because this is, for me, the defining characteristic is this weird thought process and this weird language that they've, you know, learned how to use. And me, I'm a musician, I'm a ham radio operator, and I know Morse code. I've communicated with Morse code using tones, right? And that is a very elegant way of communicating to me. And the contrast between that more elegant way of communicating that is partially displayed in this episode, and I have some partial experience with here in the real world, is a stark contrast to the messiness of ordinary language and the way we communicate most of the time, even in podcasts, even as podcasts as great as this one.
Yeah, it is quite a different way to communicate.
So why is our communication so messy when it could be so much more beautiful? I guess that's my fundamental question.
Because I think it's developed organically, so organic stuff is always chaos.
True words were never spoken.
Are you saying we're very far from perfection?
Yeah, I think we are.
Okay, true words were never spoken. The closer we are to biology, the messier things get.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, yeah. I mean, you know, to go into chaos theory, you know, the more that evolution goes on, the more chaotic things get. as we're seeing it.
Well, okay, okay. I might be reaching for an analogy here, but we've basically just drawn an analogy between things that develop organically and things that are planned and structured and designed to be beautiful. Can we run that same contrast with this idea of the alliance that we were talking about a while ago, right? There's an organic alliance. You know, here's what I need right now. Here's what you need. It's messy. We still steal things. We don't stick to our principles, but it's this messy organic alliance versus the well-structured, organized, beautiful alliance that Captain Janeway has in mind.
Yeah, I like that analogy. And, you know, maybe that's one of the reasons why Janeway's alliance works, because it's actually, you know, thought out and planned out and structured in a way to try to get them somewhere, and instead of kind of just working quickly at whatever you can think of and, you know, stealing things and just hoping for the next opportunity. And because these people that are raiding, they're not really doing much planning. They're just like, oh, there's a new ship over there, let's get the stuff and let's hope that nobody gets us. Yeah. You know,
like, for me personally, I've had to learn to take my time to think about what I really want to say. If I shoot from the hip, I will say something I regret. So, you know, it's important to kind of pause, collect your words, think about the right thing, make a plan, make sure, you know, conveys what you really want to convey, has the right tone. And that kind of more organized, more structured, maybe more beautiful way of approaching communication has been a learning curve. And I feel like the Alliance is the same thing. Like, you know, if the Alliance is shooting from the hip, like, there's our next target, let's go, everyone, let's go raid that other ship. You know, wait, what? That's too fast. Like, the whole Alliance needs to slow down, take its time, make a real plan, think long term. And think how many times we as humans in our communication and politically in our actions, we're just reacting rather than making a plan.
Yeah, and there can be a lot of incentives for just reacting, because if you react, you can be the first person to do this or to take care of, take advantage of this opportunity, or you can be rewarded for that by getting more attention because you're the first one to say something about something. I mean, I think that can especially...
Oh, that never happens in business, yeah.
And it never happens in social media or anything like that. But yeah, there's a lot of incentive to, nowadays, I think, to be impulsive and shoot from the hip, and maybe it makes for some of the messy things that we see. I think you might be right.
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that Janeway's coming from a place where she's already got a structure in place, like the Federation is already a thing that exists and it's already codified, and that has probably come about in a very messy fashion over time, gradually and organically. But now that it's set down and it is very ordered, and there is a certain way of doing things, and these are the rules, and we all know what they are, and we abide by them, she can start that off from a more organized place to start off.
Yeah,
with.
I mean, this is the contrast between what we see in Enterprise versus what we see in TNG or in Voyager, right? We see the messiness of the formation of the Federation in Enterprise. By TNG and Voyager, we've got the well-fleshed out, well-ordered, there's already standards and norms and principles and best practices, and that's the reality in the 24th century.
That's true, but even it goes even further back, because it's not like they were just working out this messy stuff, you know, in the Enterprise era and the early Federation era, because those ideas and those principles were descended from things that came earlier in history, hundreds or even thousands of years before. So it's like what Janeway has is the culmination of all of this thought that's happened over a really long period of time, so that she could have a quick framework to be like, this is how we're going to do something. And maybe the other, you know, species and ships that are stuck there don't have the same kind of framework, or if they do, they just throw it out the window right away.
So in the interest of coming up with as many alternate podcast titles as possible, we have To the Existential Journey, and now we have To the Very Lengthy Journey.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and I mean, effectively what she does is kind of fast forward them through, you know, the evolution of figuring out how they're going to all work together, because... you know, she comes from a civilization where they've spent thousands of years already figuring all of that out, so she can come in and go, look, we've spent a really long time getting here to this position, we're pretty sure that this is the right way to do it, let's give this a go.
She's going to drag them kicking and screaming into the 24th century, like some sort of 24th century version of Plato's protagonist running back into the allegory of the cave and dragging the prisoners out into the sunlight. She's doing that with...
Nope.
Yeah, she's like, you are going to be civilized and be part of a good, morally sound alliance, not this chaotic, reactive alliance.
Yeah. It's kind of almost the opposite of the Prime Directive.
It is. That's what I'm saying. You know, she's not very respectful of other races, beliefs, and cultures, and traditions, and ways of thinking. And she wants them to be like her vision.
Well, she's offering them something and saying, do you want to join this alliance or not? Yeah. So I think it's in keeping with the Prime Directive, because they can either say, that's great, I'm interested, or they can just say no, and they'll leave them alone.
Oh,
so
sure.
I think that they're well within what they need to do. But I wonder, in thinking about this and like fast forwarding and giving them like a crash course, if Voyager's computer has like a library of all of these like Federation how-to videos, and we'll just show you like the intro video, like the 5-minute, here's the Federation and its history and how it works.
That's what
and
I'm
why
saying.
It's great.
Okay. Maybe I'm not giving Captain Janeway enough credit, and I'm probably not, and I love Captain Janeway, so don't get me wrong, but I feel like she's proselytizing a little bit. Like, she's got her little video about what the Federation should be, and she's got her little tracks that she's handing out. she's definitely advocating for what she thinks the world should be.
Yeah. You are right, though, Justin. You know, she doesn't really force anyone.
No, she's not twisting her arms.
She tries to persuade people, and I think, you know, we've talked a little bit previously on the show about, you know, how people trying to force people to do stuff is never the way to get anyone to agree with you. And she's definitely good at persuading people that, well, this is probably going to work better than what you're doing, and here's all the reasons why, and we're going to start by setting an example that we're going to abide by the rules that we're laying down, therefore you can trust us and give it a go and come on
board.
Well,
what she's done is given the other captains, the ones that decided to join the Alliance, the couple of them, a vision for what life could be. They're used to fighting for their lives. It's messy, it's ugly, it's nasty, brutish, and short. But now she's like, now just think a little more long term. Think about what life could be if we all band together. And she's given them a vision that they didn't really think was possible.
Yeah, I think what she's giving, like a motivational speech, like, join us and you can do it too, you know? I think she is very persuasive. And the guy
thank you, Tony Robbins.
And I think the guy at the end kind of sums it up, like, you know, he the alien at the end, I don't know the name, but he's saying, when they're in the transporter room, I didn't think that this would happen. And they say, well, why did you join the Alliance? They said, your Captain Janeway is very persuasive and the food was very good.
Yeah.
I mean, like,
that's a really good point, Justin. People don't join an organization because of an idea. As motivating as ideas can be, people bind together with other people that they want to be around and who inspire them.
Yeah, in a personal relationship, like, she offered some food supplies. We had lunch in the mess hall and we talked about it. It's like forging this personal relationship where you're listening and you're like, oh, maybe I'll think about that. And toward the beginning, he goes off and he thinks about it and he helps them later on because he's thought about it. And I don't know, maybe one of Seven's dishes was really delicious and he wanted to have some more or something. But yeah, it isn't just about these ideals are great. Oh yeah, they're great, I'm going to join you. It's forging the personal relationship. And it's also giving them some things they need, like medical supplies and food, and thinking, you know, maybe they are doing this because they know what they're doing, right? Why would they risk giving these supplies if they didn't have a clear idea of what they wanted to do? They must know what they're doing, right? They wouldn't just give away everything and starve to death. Something like that.
Yeah, and I think if the people who are trapped in the void, or the ones that are already there when they arrive, are obviously all out for themselves, and that it's very combative, and they're probably feeling very alone and without any support. And if some strong character comes along and says, look, there's a better way of doing this, and kind of really kind of puts themselves in a position where they can look up to them as a leader, then I can see absolutely why they would attach themselves to that.
And there is a bit of something religious about it, isn't there? Because there, you know, a lot of the great religions, and I just say great meaning they have a lot of adherents, have started with someone saying, you've done this, I think there's a better way, let me tell you about it, and then gathering followers and people who feel the same way, or they're persuaded, like, oh, I didn't think about it that way, well, let me see what that's all about. So I think maybe the word you used about proselytizing may be correct, because she is spreading the gospel of the Federation, right?
The gospel according to Captain Janeway.
Yeah, remember that old movie Short Circuit with Johnny Five? Remember the remember the song at the end of the movie? Come and follow me. But okay, so there's two ways of reading this. All right, okay. There's the come and follow me in like the Jesus sense, like, you know, come be my disciples, come follow me. And then there's the come and follow me like in the Jerry Maguire sense. I'm taking the goldfish. Who's coming with me? which spin on this come and follow me moment?
I think Janeway would like to think she was more Jesus than Jerry Maguire.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know. I felt like when she kicked the guy off the ship, it was a little more Jerry Maguire to me. But
well, yeah, maybe. But it's just like, you know, Jesus overturning tables in the temple.
Point taken.
But yeah, I mean, the way that I feel, and I think I talked about this before, she has this unshakable faith. It is like the Federation is her religion, mm-hmm. and that
yeah.
she is going to keep going with that even if it kills her, right? It does feel like she's going to have faith and there's nothing that's going to dissuade her from it.
I feel like there's something to that, though, because, you know, here in the United States, we have this political alliance. We are 50 separate states, but we're bound together by this idea of America, right? And that idea is kind of an anti-rational religious thing. Like, come hell or high water, we're going to preserve the Union. And that is part of our history as a nation. And Kay, I don't know if you can relate to that. You know, that's a very American way of thinking about a political organization. But I think there's an element of religiosity to that. That idea of, like, come, you know, preserving the alliance no matter what.
Well, here, yeah, it would be faith in, you know, the union of all the states together as one country. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to derail too much, but it's probably not best to talk to British people about preserving alliances at the moment.
All right, next topic.
Yeah, we could go quite seriously off the rails if we tried to talk about that too much. But I do get what you're saying, Zach, absolutely.
Yeah, I think the fundamental insight is that if you really want to take the alliance seriously, it has to transcend that motivated self-interest we were talking about at the beginning of the show. And how do you do that? It has to become part of your DNA. It's got to be a fundamental idea that is the starting point for all the other ideas you're going to come up with.
Yeah, I think you're right about that. Yeah, it's like a faith in the ideal, right? Yeah.
And then you can solve all the practical problems that come up. But, you know, if one of those ideas is, let's dissolve the alliance, like, whoa, wait a minute, put the brakes on. You have deviated from our ideals at that point.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm sure if we were to dig back through 729 episodes of Star Trek, we'd find plenty of examples in other places of captains and other members of Starfleet and the Federation demonstrating similar ideals, you know, the sense that they uphold this Federation as almost a religion, close to a religion, or the thing that they have faith in, if we don't want to call it a religion. That's their object of faith.
I want someone to put together the Federation recruitment tract or pamphlet.
or the Space Tube video for the Federation.
Yes. See, wouldn't this be Neelix's job as the ambassador? Wouldn't it fall on him to come up with whatever media are required to promote the idea of the Federation and put it on his Briefing with Neelix channel?
Yeah.
Yeah, or maybe there's a podcast that Neelix does that they can download onto their device and just hear about the Federation on their ship and indoctrinate them. Maybe he has a whole series.
Doubtless he has a whole series.
Like, be sure to hit that subscribe button because we really need you in the Federation.
And don't forget to leave us a 5-star review.
Because when you hit the subscribe button, you're part of our alliance.
Yes, you are part of our alliance.
Click here to join.
Yeah, I have read and agree to the terms and conditions. Oh, wait a minute, I just joined.
Are we completely trivializing the idea of Federation membership at this point?
But really, like, when you think about it, you know, by the 24th century, there's 150 member worlds, and there was this, you know, for each of them, a certain way of doing it or campaign or whatever, and there was probably a different process for all of them. I mean, by the time you get to the 24th century, they must have a lot of that down, like all the material, the people they send, and, you know, the...
Welcome back.
Yeah. Welcome back, yes.
Welcome to the Federation. Here's your 10,000-page handbook.
Does it come in like a bag with like a free pen and like one of those little... I don't know whether you get these in the States, but they're like a little kind of fluffy bug with like the little tag on that tells you about the company or whatever.
It must come with like a little like warning section. Like, here are the things you don't do or you'll get in trouble, right? You're like... Like when you start a new company, they have an HR department. They always hand you the little packet at the back, you know, with asterisks. It's like, oh, make sure you don't do this.
So. Yeah, here are all the things that will void your Federation membership, just listed in fine print at the bottom.
Yeah. Well, it's been a really great discussion, Justin. Have we covered all of the points that you had there? Is there anything else you wanted to touch on? Have you got any final thoughts? Or?
Well, I'll give some final thoughts because I think we did cover a lot of the things that I was interested in covering. So as I mentioned at the beginning, this is one of my favorite episodes. I really connect with the Void, with Janeway, really sticking to her principles throughout, seeing these alliances get formed to help them, seeing them make contact with a fascinating new species that ultimately helps them. I think it really is a lot about the Federation. And actually, I think I read the original title of the episode instead of The Void was Federation, because they are forming like this mini Federation. So I like the ideals that it has, the stakes, and they put a lot into this one episode. And it gave us a lot to really talk about and think about. I actually didn't expect we would talk quite as much about alliances as we did, but I was really fascinated by that whole discussion. And yeah, it's definitely one of my favorite episodes. And you know, if you're listening and you haven't checked this one out for a while, I'd recommend doing it because I think we all, even if it's maybe not our favorite episode, we all enjoyed giving it a watch and thinking about it.
Yeah, it moved up a notch in my estimation.
Yeah, same here as well. Definitely. I was surprised how much I enjoyed watching it this time, watching it with more of a focus on what it was actually about, because I think it doesn't necessarily hit a lot of the things that I normally find to be my favourite things in Voyager episodes, but actually I think it's a fantastic episode of Star Trek. And because I've been watching the original series lately and kind of thinking more about how that relates to Star Trek as a whole and what Star Trek overall is trying to say, I think I have more of an appreciation for this episode after doing this and after watching it again. So yeah, I appreciate that, Justin. So thanks for bringing this one up.
And it got me thinking how I can relate to everyone out there, all of you listeners, and you guys in particular, more musically.
Oh, that's always a good thing.
You mean my voice isn't already like music to your ears?
It's music to our ears, but it could maybe be more structured music, if possible.
Yeah.
But Kay, actually, I wanted to make a comment about what you were saying, because I've found, you know, as I've been doing podcasting and looking at certain episodes, that I actually get more, even more out of certain episodes if I sit down and I think about it in terms of a discussion or an analysis on a podcast. Like Zach and I were on an episode of The Ready Room about a third season original series episode called The Cloud Minders. And this is something that when I first saw it, I was like, this is terrible. I don't even know why I'm watching this. And in a rewatch, I had skipped it over. But because we were going to watch it for The Ready Room, I watched it and I was like, wow, there's this going on and this. And when you're actually paying attention to these things, something you even think wasn't very good can kind of rise up a notch. And so I really appreciate that and being able to analyze these things and podcast about them.
Yeah, that's a really good insight, that forcing yourself to sit down and even just taking a couple notes, like writing down a couple of bullet points about what the episode's about, prepping for a podcast, it can reveal things in an episode that you've seen, you know, 50 or 100 times that you never really focused on before.
Yeah, definitely. So, as Justin was saying, you know, if you haven't watched this one in a while, maybe give it another shot. Maybe give it another shot.
And Justin, we really want to thank you for coming on the show, and appreciate the way you filled the void left by Suzanne, since Suzanne couldn't be with us today.
We do.
Oh, it's been a pleasure being here, and glad I could pick an episode that would let you segue in with something like that, Zach. It's
I'm gonna send you off with a little advice. I'm gonna request that you go replicate some curtains to deal with the existential horror of the nothingness, not being able to see the stars, and I would like you to get busy working on that Federation recruitment tract.
Yeah, and I'll work on the space tube recruitment video and the 10,000-page manual and contract, and yeah, I'll work on that and
make sure the Federation legal department looks that over, would you?
I will. I'll have my cats look it over.
Well, it's been an awful lot of fun talking about the Void today, but that is not the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Literary Treks. Oh, Matthew, I'm doing just fine. You know, it's always fun every week to hop on here and talk Star Trek books and comics with you. And I don't know if you realize this, Matthew, but this is our 200th episode of Literary... Wait a minute, Matthew. We don't host this show anymore.
Standard Orbit.
Well, I think everything comes back to the naked time for him, and he just can't get away from swords.
Running around with a sword.
He's just running around with a sword. So maybe it was this episode that started that whole thing, but man, yeah, it's kind of an odd thing that he's defined by a sword in his hand, you know?
The 602 Club.
I honestly was thrilled with the way that they set it up because, like you said, sort of like Russian dolls, I guess, is a good way to explain it. You introduce one character in this existing show, and then it leads to that character's own show, which leads to the next one's own show.
And introducing The Edge, a Star Trek Discovery podcast.
But if I ended up missing an episode, I would record 45 minutes of blank space on my VHS tape, and then I would wait until it came around, and then I would put the episode in its proper order.
This explains so much.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You will find us anywhere you can get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they're published. And whilst you're there, we'd really appreciate it if you leave us a star rating and a review. If you're not an Apple user, we have got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Play Music, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, in most third-party apps, and you can also stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
Well, we'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways that you can share your thoughts with us. The best place to join in the larger conversation is in the Babel Conference, Trek FM's listeners-only discussion group on Facebook. Just type Babel, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up. If you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Just choose Message to a Trek FM Show and select To the Journey. That will come right to us. You can also find the network on Twitter at TrekFM and on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. So speaking of contact information, Justin, when you're not busy violating the terms of the Federation Charter, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me co-hosting Earl Grey with Amy Nelson and Richard Marquez. It's our dedicated TNG podcast on Trek FM. You can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek, and I'm currently tweeting out my TNG Season 3 rewatch, and you can also find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. So, Kay, when you're not putting up curtains for Neelix, where can people find you?
Well, you can always find me in the Babel Conference. Elsewhere on the network, you can find me on a recent episode of Standard Orbit, Standard Orbit number 187, where I was talking to Ken there about my first trip through the original series. And you can always find me on Twitter. My handle there is ChocoWeeble. So, Zach, when you're not composing symphonies on your pad, where can our listeners find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek.fm as co-host of Metatrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy, along with my co-host over there, Mike Morrison. You can find me in the Babel Conference if you'd like to talk about Voyager with me there. And you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G.
Well, if you'd like to help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can get all of the details. The perks there include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more, all available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a lot of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month, and we really, really appreciate any support you can give us, and we hope you'll join the team. Again, you can find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
Well, we'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the rest of our To the Journey team from around the network, also known as the founding members of our To the Journey Trek FM Alliance. We'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Che Mutala, our Patreon manager. And we'd like to give a special thank you and a shout out to our five associate producers. We'd like to thank Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, Richard Marquez, Patrick Carlin, and Norman Lau. Thank you for your support of To the Journey and Trek FM in general.
So join us next week when we'll be using Tom Paris's cookbook to replicate the perfect peanut butter and jelly sandwich. But until then, this has been To the Journey.